Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell and Jill Robbins. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is John Russell.
India is the world's biggest vaccine maker, and it is getting ready for the worldwide effort to contain the coronavirus crisis. India manufactures more than 60% of all vaccines sold across the world. While its $40 billion drug industry is not yet involved in the production of the expensive Pfizer Incorporated and Moderna shots, the country will play an important job in immunizing much of the world. Indian companies are set to produce 8 less costly vaccines that are designed to fight COVID-19, including AstraZeneca's Covishield. Its developers call it the vaccine for the world. Barry O'Farrell is Australia's ambassador to India. O'Farrell, along with other diplomats, recently visited vaccine manufacturing areas in India. He said that only one country could meet the demands of citizens in every country, and that's India. Serum Institute of India, SII, is the world's biggest vaccine maker. It has already stored more than 50 million doses of the AstraZeneca shot. The shot still awaits emergency use approvals from both British and Indian officials. SII plans to make a total of 400 million doses of Covishield by July. It is setting up new production lines to make around 1 billion shots a year. Meanwhile, drug company Shotcasia is increasing production of vaccine vials. Vials are small glass or plastic containers for medicines. Deutsche Post's DHL, a delivery company, is working out the best way to send out the shots within the country and around the world. Because of the large volumes coming out of India, and of course the affordable vaccines, there is no other country that will contribute more towards ending the pandemic than India, SII CEO Adar Poonawalla told the Reuters news agency recently. Much of India's vaccine production could be, at least at first, for local use. With nearly 10 million infections, India has the world's second highest rate, following the United States with the highest. India's government is likely to order a large amount of the vaccines for its 1.3 billion people. Prime Minister Narendra Modi has not yet said exactly how much India will need, but his government has said some vaccines may be approved in the next few weeks. Poonawalla said he expects to sell hundreds of millions of doses at home. Nearly half of its production could go overseas, the company has said. India's Bharat Biotech has asked for emergency approval for its government-backed vaccine candidate. The company is in talks to sell its product to more than 10 countries in South America, Asia, and Eastern Europe. Russia, meanwhile, has signed deals with Indian companies that will make the country the production and export center for its Sputnik V vaccine. Many companies in India's vaccine supply industries are making investments without signed agreements. We've taken a calculated risk, said Rishad Dadachanji, a director at Shotkesha. Shotkesha is increasing its yearly manufacturing ability to 1.5 billion vials by November. That is around 300 million more vials than it currently produces. I'm John Russell.
In some countries, there would not be any problem with art showing French revolutionaries replaced with cartoon cats and birds. But it may be a sensitive subject for Thailand's monarchy. For artist Yuri Kensaku, the country's political situation shapes her work. Protesters in Thailand are calling for reform of the monarchy and other changes. People have started their political awakening, said Kensaku. The Bangkok Art Biennale is now showing her latest artwork. It combines the influences of her Thai background with her experience making art in La Rochelle, France. There, historical works of art showing times of revolution gave her the ideas she uses now. Talk of revolution is sensitive in Thailand. People loyal to the monarchy say that protesters are trying to bring down that system of government. Supporters of the king think protesters are calling for reforms to limit his powers. But the protest leaders say that is not their goal. The protesters want to remove Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha and establish a new constitution. Kensaku's parents are Thai and Japanese. She was born and raised in Bangkok. She said her work is not meant to be a message about the monarchy. We must learn about the past to understand the present, but I'm not saying that we have to go that way necessarily, she said. Kensaku does not believe that reforms will end the Thai monarchy. In the middle of one large Kensaku work, a female body with the head of a chicken holds a flag of blue, white, and red. It is similar to Frenchman Eugene Delacroix's 1830 painting, Liberty Leading the People. In Delacroix's work, a woman representing liberty holds the French flag high over bodies of fighters at her feet. The painting depicts France's July Revolution of 1830. Kensaku's piece is called Blue, Blanc, Rouge. It relates to both the French and Thai flags, which use the colors blue, white, and red. In France's flags, the colors represent freedom, equality, and friendship. In Thailand, they stand for monarchy, religion, and nation. Kensaku's other work at the Biennale is a sculpture titled Broken Victoria. It is modeled on the winged victory of Samothrace, an ancient piece at the Louvre Museum in Paris. Kensaku's work combines a winged female body with the head of a cat with green hair. The cat woman holds a revolutionary flag above her head. A white tie around its middle suggests a symbol of the Thai protests, Kensaku said, and the catwoman's wing is broken. She noted that protesters can get hurt. In order to achieve victory, you have to fight for it, and it's not going to be easy, she said. I'm Jill Robbins.
School districts across the United States have reported the number of students failing classes has risen many times higher than usual numbers. English language learners, as well as disabled and poor students, are suffering the most. Eric Jesperson is principal of McNary High School in the state of Oregon. At his school, 38% of grades in late October were failing, compared with 8% in normal times. Educators see a number of reasons for the change. Students learning from home often miss assignments or school completely. Internet availability is limited or not effectively established, making it difficult to complete and upload assignments. And teachers who do not see their students in person have fewer ways to note who is falling behind. That is especially true with many students keeping their cameras off during online classes. The increase in failing grades has been seen in districts of all sizes around the country. At Jesperson School in the Salem-Keizer Public School District, hundreds of students at first had grade scores of 0.0%. This showed that students simply were not taking part in school at all. In New Mexico, more than 40% of middle and high school students were failing at least one class as of late October. In Houston, Texas, 42% of students received at least one F in the first grading period of the year. A grade of F is the lowest possible letter grade a student can receive in the United States. Nearly 40% of grades for high school students in St. Paul, Minnesota, were Fs. That is double the amount than seen in a usual year. Many schools have increased efforts to return to in-person learning. Other schools are changing their grading policies and giving students more time to complete assignments. Jesperson said his school began to see grades improve after bringing groups of 300 students into the building to receive support from teachers. However, that recently stopped because of the area's rising coronavirus cases. Advisory teams have increased contact with students. Teachers have been asked to temporarily stop assigning graded homework. And parents of Hispanic students were invited to learn how they can see their children's grades online. In Charleston, South Carolina, administrators and teachers are considering bringing back a grading system used in the spring. The system permitted instructors to give 50s instead of zeros to make it less harmful to students' grades, said 8th grade English teacher Jody Stallings. "I'm an English teacher, not a math teacher, but I've learned zeros are very, very devastating to an average," he said. Most of the failing grades Stallings gives out come from missing assignments, not assignments that were turned in with a lot of wrong answers. You talk to them later, and they say, "You know, I just didn't do it. I didn't know the answer, so I just didn't do it," he said. Stallings teaches most of his students in person and the rest online at the same time at Moultrie Middle School. He added, "When you have a kid in person, he's going to take the test. Even if he doesn't know anything, he has a chance." In Hatch, New Mexico, high school registrar Blanca Ramirez said her job has changed during the pandemic. Now she often serves as a translator and advisor to students and parents who speak only Spanish. In discussions with students, She asks them how they can have such low grades. Ramirez said she thinks many students are afraid to even begin their schoolwork. And so just making that phone call opens up that encouragement, and they start making a little bit more effort, she added. In some cases, the biggest difficulty for an English language learning student is simply getting the necessary classwork online. A few times this school year, Ramirez has had students meet her in the school parking lot so she can show them and their parents how to use the online system. Hatch High School reported 79% of students were failing at least one class during their first grading period of the year. That percentage has been reduced to 46% within a few months. School spokeswoman Audrey Bluehouse says that is because school has been made easier and students are now more engaged. Bluehouse says the number was high in part because the school added an eighth class to every student's schedule this fall. Now, teachers have been instructed to give less homework. They have been urged to find different ways of teaching. Grading has been changed from a 100-point system to a 50-point system, so that missed assignments with zeros do not hurt students as much.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In 1880, President Rutherford Hayes completed four successful years in the White House. He did not want to serve another term. Hayes was a Republican. His party had great hopes of electing another Republican in the election of 1880. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe report on that election.
Many Republicans wanted to nominate former President Ulysses Grant. Grant had been out of office 4 years. People seemed to have forgotten the political problems that shook his administration. Other Republicans supported the powerful party leader, Senator James Blaine. A third candidate was John Sherman, the Secretary of the Treasury. The Republicans had great difficulty choosing among Grant, Blaine, and Sherman. At their national convention, Republican delegates voted again and again. None of the three men received a majority.
The delegates voted 10 times, 20 times, 30 times. Finally, on the 34th ballot, 17 of the delegates voted for a compromise candidate. He was James Garfield, a Republican leader in Congress. Soon, both Sherman and Blaine asked all of their delegates to vote for Garfield. The compromise candidate won the nomination. James Garfield offered the vice presidential nomination to Chester Arthur of New York. Arthur's honesty had been questioned when President Hayes removed him as collector of taxes for the port of New York. But a powerful party leader there supported him. So delegates gave Arthur the vice presidential nomination to strengthen party unity.
The Democratic Party chose for its presidential candidate a hero of the Civil War, General Winfield Scott Hancock of Pennsylvania. The election campaign of 1880 was not exciting. Democrats charged that Republicans were dishonest. Republicans charged that a Democrat in the White House would make the South too powerful. Many people at that time still hated the South for starting the Civil War. They wanted to keep Southern states weak. 9 million people voted in the election. James Garfield won. He got only 10,000 more popular votes than Winfield Scott Hancock, but he got a majority of votes in the Electoral College. Garfield won 214 electoral votes. Hancock got 155.
The new president was 49 years old. He had served in the House of Representatives for 17 years. He had been a teacher, a college president, and a general in the Union Army during the Civil War. James Garfield became president of the United States on March 4th, 1881. His choices for a cabinet immediately reopened the conflicts that had appeared during the party convention.
The Republican Party had two powerful leaders. One was Senator Roscoe Conkling. The other was Senator James Blaine. Garfield won Blaine's support by naming him Secretary of State. He lost Conkling's support by refusing to name one of Conkling's supporters Secretary of the Treasury. Garfield denied he had promised anything to Conkling. Then he made Conkling even angrier by appointing one of Conkling's political enemies collector of taxes for the Port of New York. That was the most important federal job in Conkling's home state. Conkling refused to accept the appointment. He began a struggle in the Senate to block it.
Conkling charged that President Garfield had failed to observe the policy of senatorial courtesy. Traditionally, the president does not fill federal jobs in a state until he discusses them with the senators from that state. This long-time policy gave senators firm control over local federal jobs. They were quick to attack any changes in the method. But many senators were angry at Conkling. They did not like the way he gave orders to everyone. They did not like the way he threatened his opponents. They did not want to support him on this issue.
After several weeks, it became clear that the Senate would approve President Garfield's choice for the tax collector's job. Conkling decided to resign in protest. He would ask the New York legislature to show its support by electing him again to the Senate. Before this could happen, something very unexpected took place. It happened in the train station in Washington, D.C., on July 2, 1881. A man ran up to President Garfield, pulled out a gun, and fired twice. One bullet cut Garfield's arm. The other went into his back.
The assassin was Charles Guiteau. When he fired the gun, he shouted that he supported Roscoe Conkling's political machine. Charles Guiteau was insane. He believed God had ordered him to kill the president. But the words he shouted caused many people to wonder if others might be involved. After all, the vice president, Chester Arthur, supported Roscoe Conkling too. If James Garfield died, Chester Arthur would become president. History has provided no evidence that Roscoe Conkling, Chester Arthur, or any other political leader had a part in the shooting. Guiteau is believed to have acted on his own. Yet the situation did cause a great deal of tension while the nation waited to see if Garfield would survive.
The president was carried to the White House. A doctor tried to remove the bullet from his back. He could not find it. Days passed. The president's condition changed from day to day. Doctors pushed their instruments into the wound as they continued to look for the bullet. The wound became infected. Garfield grew worse. Then he grew better. He asked to be taken to the seashore. 2 months later, the doctors warned the cabinet and Vice President Arthur that Garfield was dying. The end finally came on September 19, 1881. The president's body was taken back to Washington. Memorial services were held there. And then the body was taken to his home state of Ohio for burial.
Not until after Garfield's death did doctors find the bullet that killed him. It lay only a few centimeters from the wound. Tissue had grown around it. The bullet itself would not have killed the president. What killed him was the effort made by doctors to find the bullet. Their instruments had spread infection throughout his body. James Garfield had been president for 6 months. He was the second American president to be assassinated. The first, Abraham Lincoln, had been shot just 16 years before.
The man who shot James Garfield, Charles Guiteau, was tried by a court in Washington. He was found guilty of murder. Like those found guilty of plotting to kill Abraham Lincoln, he was hanged. Vice President Chester Arthur was in New York when he received news of President Garfield's death. He quickly sent for a judge to give him the oath of office as president. Arthur was in his early 50s. He would serve one term as leader of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
This is VOA News. Reporting by remote, I'm David Byrd. The U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services says a vaccination program for assisted living and nursing homes will launch Monday with the capacity to deliver thousands of vaccinations a day. In remarks at an Operation Warp Speed briefing, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar said the public can expect even more doses.
For next week, we have allocated another approximately 2 million doses of Pfizer's vaccine for jurisdictions to use. And if Moderna's vaccine is authorized by the FDA in the coming days, we have allocated nearly 5.9 million doses of that product.
Azar said it's important for trusted authorities to take the vaccine in public, especially leaders in racial minorities, to show government confidence in the program. The secretary made his comments after touring a vaccination operation at Georgetown University Hospital in Washington. On Capitol Hill, congressional leaders are nearing agreement on a COVID-19 relief package. We get more from AP's Sagar Meghani.
After a night of meetings, optimism from the Senate's leaders.
We made major headway toward hammering out a targeted pandemic relief package.
The finish line is in sight.
On a roughly $900 billion package that would include new stimulus checks, aid to businesses, and help for shipping vaccines. Under intense pressure, both sides are giving on priorities that had been sticking points, including aid to state and local governments and corporate shields for COVID-related lawsuits. President-elect Joe Biden says he's encouraged by the progress, but more will have to be done after he takes office.
It's a down payment.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
You can find more on these stories and the rest of the day's news at voanews.com. You can also follow us on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. The fugitive widow of an Islamic State gunman and a man described as his logistician have been convicted of terrorism charges in the trial of 14 people linked to the January 2015 attacks in Paris against the satirical Charlie Hebdo newspaper and a kosher supermarket. Wednesday's verdict ends the three-month trial of the 14 people linked to the 3 days of killings across Paris claimed jointly by the Islamic State group and Al-Qaeda. During the proceedings, France was struck by new attacks, a wave of coronavirus infections among the defendants, and devastating testimony bearing witness to bloodshed that continues to rattle France. The European Commission said Wednesday that the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine should be the Christmas gift for all Europeans if the European Medicines Agency approves the vaccine next Monday. Speaking during a European Parliament session, Margarita Skinas, the vice president of the European Commission, said they were ready to provide the formal authorization and placing in the market of supersonic fast procedures.
We can do in 2 days the formal authorization. That normally for this type of authorizations that placing in the markets can even take 2 months.
Skinas also said they would seek to secure access for all EU citizens and the same time to the Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Johnson & Johnson vaccines as soon as they are approved for use. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has defended his government's plan to ease coronavirus restrictions over the Christmas holidays, despite a sharp spike in infection rates across the country. AP's Charles de Ledesma reports.
Scientists have raised safety concerns about the proposal, which allows three households to form a bubble over the five-day Christmas period. However, in the House of Commons, Boris Johnson stayed firm to the principle, saying families can decide for themselves.
We do think it's absolutely vital that people should, at this very, very tricky time, exercise a high degree of personal responsibility, especially when they come into contact with elderly people and avoid contact with elderly people wherever possible.
Also, the Prime Minister told lawmakers the first week of a nationwide coronavirus vaccine rollout had gone well, with 138,000 people getting the jab. Charles de Ledesma, London.
Doha, the capital city of Qatar, has been awarded the Olympic Council of Asia's 21st Asian Games in 2030. Doha beat Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, in a vote of 45 national Olympic committees. Riyadh will host the 22nd Asian Games in 2034. Visit voanews.com for more. Reporting by remote, I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Mama, mama, mama,
in Africa. Welcome to your super show, The African Beat on the Voice of America. From our studio here in Washington, D.C., I am David Van. Hot, rocking, and beautiful sounds from the great continent will be knocking on your doors. So relax, because I'm going to take you on another trip around Africa on disc. As we start off today from Ghana with a beautiful traditional music with a striking voice of Nyonuofia, and this is done for us by the Agosso Band of Ghana, and the title of the track is 17 Days. Yes, that's what we're going to start off with today, 17 Days. And right after that, Sina Sumbuya, the son of Salif Keita from Mali, and Queen Abbey by Professor Kpakpakpa from Liberia, who is currently based in Abuja, Nigeria. This is from his latest album, Queen Abbey. But right now, 17 Days, the voice of Nyonuofia and the Agosso Band of Ghana.
I was 6 times 10. want ya.
Rumsey on the beat.
Professeur Papa, Professeur Sanflac, avec la participation de Blessing Tomato.
By Professor Kwakpakpa of Liberia, based in Abuja, Nigeria. And right before that, Sina Sumbuya, the son of Salif Keita from Mali, and 17 Days by the Agosso Band of Ghana. You are listening to the African Beat on the Voice of America.
My name is Dena Dennis of Stereogles, all the way from South Sudan. I always listen to the African Beat with David Vedder on the Voice of America.
Welcome back, and let's do it together this time. The sound of Taviel from Cameroon is coming up next, and right after that, Ndombolo by Sinazuyo. But let's do it together now and enjoy the music. I'll be right back.
arriba. Bailar conmigo. La libertad con todo. Porque tu bienestar es lo que importa. Mi amigo. Cantaré, cantaré. Mi vida es tu vida. Si se puede, si se puede. Come on.
The forgotten, like lost knowledge, more mileage. We bled for blood diamonds. Yeah, we bled often. Sacrifice an offering. Life can get cold like we live in Boston. But if we come together, keep it running, then maybe one day we can make some progress. Hey, maybe one day we make some progress. So before we roll the dice, better be cautious. Hey, better be cautious. Now look at us, we flossing. I don't wanna see my brother in the coffin. We need less hate, more loving.
Cantare. Si se puede, si se puede. Come on, let's do it together. Cantaré, cantaré. Mi vida es tu vida. Si se puede, si se puede. Come on, let's do it together. Come on, let's do it together. Come on, let's do it together. Permanecemos unidos, aun condicionalmente todos. Amamos esta tierra.
Dombolo by Sinazo, and Let's Do It Together by Taviel of Cameroon.
Hi, I am Devoa. I love the African beat on The Voice of America. It's hot and it's good to go.
Shaking tumba, they want for no side. I get some. Now me mama a fever. I don't see say you na fool boy. No get money for spend. You na school boy. Me I need a road boy, not a tool boy. Done that a big shot like Leroy. Me na the queen them decoy. Me I see a competition. Me a destroy. Me a bag big toys. Them ready for deploy. Come meet me na the VIP boy. If you know you a bad girl, wine to the beat, back it up on the road boy and get down low. If you know you a bad girl, wine. Get up on the road, boy, and get down low. It like the way I wind. We are back it up, fling it up, shake it up, drop it to the floor. It like the way I wind. We are back it up, the boy can't take no more. If you know you a bad girl, wind to the beat, back it up on the road, boy, and get down low. If you know you a bad girl, wind to the beat, back it up on the road, boy, and get down low. I make them say, oh my. I bounce, I'm like Lorad. I sure say them know why. Call me a natural woman. I'm like Lorraine. I sure say them know why. Call me a natural woman. Make them say, EJ, you not the baddest girl where I know. I tell them other girl, them make them go. If you not be nowhere, now you know. Team take over, taking over the stereo. Me not the queen, them decoy. Me I see a competition, me a destroy. Me a bag big toys, them ready for deploy. Come with me, not the VIP boy. If you know you a bad girl, wine to the beat, back it up on the road, boy, and get down low. Wine to the beat, back it up on the road, boy, and get down low. It like the way I wind. We are back it up, fling it up, shake it up, drop it to the floor. It like the way I wind. We are back it up, the boy can't take no more. If you know you a bad girl, wine to the beat, back it up on the road, boy, and get down low. If you know you a bad girl, wine to the beat, back it up on the road, boy, and get down low. Me say, we are salon, baby, get shape, oh. It's a be shaking tumba.